your glasses and have a drink with us. Sick and tired masses are all gonna rise above. Y con esta canción les vamos a mostrar que si los tiempos se olvidan, la música queda. Vamos a brindar por un mundo sin prejuicios. Vamos a cantar por nuestra libertad. ¡Ay!
Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon to start your week feeling uplifted and optimistic. Let's tap into the universal energy that connects us all. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. We have a very special guest today, Jeffrey Armstrong. He is the author of The Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar, and we're doing something a little bit special and interesting and wonky today. We've actually teamed up with Novus Television, which is a local community television station in Vancouver, and so we are recording for television while we are broadcasting live on the radio. This is totally an experiment, so we may be fumbling around. We'll just see what happens today, so please do bear with us. And you may be listening in Vancouver at CITR 101.9 FM or online at CITR.ca, cosmicdimensions.com, empowerradio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network and wherever you're listening from. Or you might also be watching on Novus Television. So wherever you are tuning in from, thank you for joining us today. And we are going to be speaking with Jeffrey Armstrong about the divine feminine, which is such an important topic to me. And I just really have been wanting to have him on the show to talk about this because we spoke a few months ago and I really wanted to pick his brain about the divine feminine. So welcome to the show, Jeffrey.
Good to see you, Marie. Namaste.
Thank you so much. So let's, first of all, your spiritual teachings of the Avatar book. For those listeners who are just tuning in for the first time and haven't heard you speak on the show before, can you give us an overview of what the book is about and what inspired you to write it?
The book was inspired when the film Avatar came out. And if you remember in the film, when they looked at each other and said, "I see you," when I said namaste as a greeting at the beginning of the show, and namaste actually means, in Sanskrit, the sacred language of India, namaste means I see you as a divine being inside of your body, inside of your ideas, beyond your skin, beyond your politics, beyond any of those things that you might have picked up along the way. I see the real you. So when James Cameron did the film Avatar, he was using one of the most important words in the language of India. In fact, I have a friend in India. I said, "Hey, have many people in India seen the film Avatar?" He said, "Yes, I will tell you." He said, "People in India are saying that in Bollywood we have films with English titles, and now in Hollywood you have films with Hindi titles." So we live in a global village now. And in that village, the knowledge of India is coming across and becoming a part of our story. So the story in India was that two times in their remembered history, 5,000 years ago and 1.2 million years ago, the Supreme Being came to Earth dressed like a human, appeared to be a human, but was really the Supreme Being, and brought his friends, his girlfriends, his family, the feminine divine, everybody came along and put on a show. I call it the Cirque du Soleil. Because who it was for is all of us, in our truest sense, to have a greater vision of what life is and what's possible. And also to have a loving vision of life and believe that Mother Earth is a real being, that the divine is both masculine and feminine, and that we are supposed to have a celebration relationship with those beings, not an angry, punitive, difficult, punishing relationship. So the avatars come to bring that kind of joyful party feeling to our relationship to the source of our existence. So when Cameron did his film, it was an opportunity for me to write a book explaining all this.
Wonderful. And you also have a student here with you today, and another one of our DJs at the station is a student of yours. So what is it that you teach?
Well, the easiest way to understand this, since yoga has come into our culture a lot now, is you'll notice that yoga starts out with the person on the mat with their body and their mind, and they're trying to sort themselves out and get organized or balanced. So if you've ever done yoga, you do a pose to one side, and then you do what's called the counter pose to the other side. What you're looking for is the balance point so you can do it without falling over. So the very essence of all yoga, postures being one kind of yoga, is to make the individual autonomous, embodied, and clear and able to connect with the source of their own existence without any outside help. Just as at the moment of death or birth, we alone were going through the process. We were being born, and when we leave our body, we'll be leaving it. No one can help, no one can come along, no one can fly with. So throughout our life, actually, we're at the center of a circle. Put your hands out. See that circle? Everyone listening, put your hands out and make the circle around you. That circle is your circle. You're supposed to be managing from your fingertips to your center, your circle. Learning to do that in a divine way is called yoga. So I teach this to people. And I take the knowledge of India in its various forms and give it to them as modules that they can apply to their own life to take control of that circle and become autonomous, clear, joyful, focused, successful in the things that they do, but respectful of others. And the other rule in yoga is work for the good of all.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. So we are here today to talk about the divine feminine. So I'm just going to jump into that. And in your book, Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar, there is a statement, "I see you as the Atma." Now, is that the same as namaste?
That's right. Okay. Atma, The word soul in English, S-O-U-L, comes from the word S-O-L, sol, in Latin, which means the sun. The word atma was the origin of the word atomic in English, the little particle that's very powerful. So just imagine at the very center of that circle is you, and you're a divine being, and you can't die. You're timeless, deathless, radiant, full of effulgence, beautiful, and your energy is shining out as the consciousness in your body and mind. That's your atma, the atomic you at the very center of your whole little universe, your body and mind and everything.
And now the sun itself, we're talking about divine feminine, and of course without the feminine there wouldn't be masculine. It's part of a whole. And I think it was in your book I was reading about the sun. The sun itself is considered masculine,
right?
Yet the rays
are feminine.
So can you explain that a bit?
Yeah, and this is a very important principle. It is that the reason we've appeared as male and female is because everything is showing up in this paired kind of a way. And so within nature, for example, the rose is the masculine of the rose, and the fragrance and beauty is the feminine of the rose. So the whole experience is always together. You might say they're always embracing. You might say they're going steady. The rose and the rose's fragrance and beauty are going steady, and they don't divorce. They don't break up. The roseness is the two of them holding hands. So when we do that, now the male and the female connection makes us more complete. For humans, it's separated, and we have to make that step. For the sun and the sunshine, or the rose and the rose's fragrance and beauty, the male and female are there. So you should be thinking by now, everyone should be thinking, why did our culture have God only be male then? Hasn't this caused problems?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, our culture was created by men. So, of course, they would say that the divine being is male.
It could be that. It could be that. Maybe it was a wrong turn we took a few thousand years ago. Because what I can tell you for sure is that for the last thousands to millions of years in India, depending on who you listen to, there's always been the male and the female divine standing right next to each other. And if you go to temples in India, you'll see Vishnu, the male divine, and Lakshmi, the female divine, or Brahma, male divine, and Saraswati, the female divine, or Shiva and Parvati, male and female, or Krishna and Radha. And interestingly enough, now, when I'm going to say this, I'm not being negative or disparaging to other religions, but I have to contrast this to say that for the last 2,000 years, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have only used a male descriptor for the Supreme Reality. And they don't talk publicly of a male and a female. I'll give you a way to think of this. I had a professor once who was a Catholic theologian, lovely fellow, we were dear friends, but we had lots of discussions and sometimes little debates, but we really loved each other. So that's what I mean about talking about other religions, but lovingly and dearly. So after one day, he was saying, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. And I went, wait a minute, what's going on here? There's a Father, because I was raised Christian, so I've heard this. But I listened again. There's a Father, there's a Son, and there's a ghost. So Marie, who died? Father, Son, and ghost. Who's missing?
The mother.
Ah. And that's what I thought. I said, wait a minute, the mother's missing. Wait, I get it. This is a single-parent dysfunctional God family. Now, my first degree was psychology, so I'm thinking, so if you went to a psychologist, what is the first thing they ask you? What is your family of origin? Tell me about your family of origin. So the psychologist would say, tell me about your family. So what if the patient said, well, my father did this, and my brother did this, and my father did this, and my brother did this. What would you say, Marie, as a psychologist?
What about your mother?
And your sister.
Yeah.
And your aunt, and your grandmother. And if I folded my arms across my chest and said, I don't want to talk about it, what would you think as a psychologist?
Issues.
Issues. You've got issues. You've got a problem talking about your mother. So with no disrespect, I have to say, that the three Middle Eastern religions, for some historical reason I can't fully explain, have a problem talking about their mother. But in India, and in the indigenous cultures of our planet, no one has trouble talking about their mother.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, mother is where they start the sentence, and the old saying is, in order to approach your father, you must first approach your mother. Why? Well, let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, who's the expert on who your father is? Your mother.
Exactly.
So, you see, in these cultures, it never occurred to them to be a single-parent, dysfunctional God family. The concept of divinity was always male and female. But for us, this is news at five. This is a new experience.
And so I'm curious, do you think that that is why we're going to talk about, I wanted to talk about divine feminine and dating, because I've been recently started dating up a storm and coming up upon all of these. I'm a little bit traditional in, I'm very feminist, but I also believe in women being women and men being men,
right,
and not trying to butt heads and women trying
difference.
To be men, mm. and, you know, because it gets confusing.
Mm.
And so do you think that that's part of where that came from in our culture, mm. where women and men are just so confused about their roles?
Yeah, the way I like to say this, I teach a relationship seminar called the Ultimate Relationship Seminar. And it's a weekend seminar preceded by four or five seminars that give you skills. And then the whole thing is to give us a new paradigm for relationship that is based on male and female divine, but it's also practical. It's how do we work with someone who has opposite abilities and skills and do so in a loving and harmonious way, since often male and female in flesh appears as opposites as well. So imagine, Marie, you're about to date someone and they begin the date the following way. Look, I'm really looking forward to dating you, but I just want to get one thing clear. I'm the man, and the man's like God, and I'm not sure who you are or what you're like. You've kind of been the troublemaker. You're the one with the apple and the snake, I think, and you've got these curves, and maybe that's the problem. I don't know, but you're definitely problematic. So I just get this clear from the start. I'm in charge. What I say goes, and any time we disagree, I solve the disagreement by being right. And after that, I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. Does that sound like a good way to start the relationship, Marie?
No.
Are you enthused? We all saw My Big Fat Greek Wedding. So this means something dysfunctional is present in our psychology because we don't have a way of understanding, and this is what I'm going to lead you to, the image that you're wearing is different than you.
Mm-hmm.
So the image of the female that each female is wearing is a reflection of the divine female. Another way to say this is the many, many women on our planet each reflect the feminine divine from a different angle. And ditto the men are reflecting the masculine divine. But we know for sure that some people don't even identify with the body that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's the wrong body and they've been tricked. So the image you're wearing is not you, it's the energy you've been given. You are the Atma inside. This immediately changes things because I'm looking in the windows of your eyes, seeing your Atma, and I see that you're in a female body. I don't say, you are the female. I say, as you said at the beginning, you're actually inside the female energy, and it's useful to behave a certain way because it's congruent with that energy to behave that way. It works harmoniously with nature.
Mm-hmm.
But neither one of the two is superior to each other, but they may be better than each other at certain functions. And that may even be the wisdom of dividing us up into two functional parts for accomplishing things. Generally, men are better at parallel parking. Do you know why? This is a great story.
Spatial ability?
Yeah, but do you know where that comes from? Well, when Albert Einstein died, guess what all the men did? They cut his head open and looked to see the size of his brain. Men are interested in size, aren't they? So they looked to see the size of his brain, thinking it would be huge because he was so smart. It was small. In fact, it was as small as a woman's, which is the reason that for many years scientists thought women were less intelligent, which is also not true. Size of brain is not intelligence. So for a while, they were very disappointed, and they thought, gosh, Einstein's brain was small. This is very disappointing. They should have gotten it right away. Einstein intuited the law that he found.
Mm-hmm.
He intuited the law of relativity, and his wife, who was better than him at mathematics, came up with the formula to go with his intuition. So he was supposedly feminine in the way he discovered what he discovered, and his wife was masculine in helping him to frame it in a formula. Now here's the secret, the punchline. So it turns out upon closer examination, the spatial part of Einstein's brain was huge. And that's the parallel parking part.
Mm-hmm.
So some women have a huge spatial part of their brain, and they're architects and physicists, and they're great at spatiality, and they're great at parallel parking. But a lot of them don't, because the way their hormones select for making the brain and formatting it, it doesn't make that part as big. So therefore, spatiality is not always their speciality, as it was in Einstein's case. So in this, we find that the male and female are actually intermingled with us at the functional level, and we're wearing the picture of male and female at the practical level.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for explaining that. It's time for a break, so we will be back in just a moment. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are joined today by Jeffrey Armstrong. He is the author of The Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar. So thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in a flash.
What do you think the internet should be? Fast? Open? Reliable? A network that is diverse, free, and allows an equal exchange of ideas? This point of view is often challenged by monopolies in the media, as well as by decisions made on issues such as internet openness and usage-based billing. Without question, these decisions have an immense impact on consumers, socially and economically. Let's admit it, the internet has become an essential part of our lives. That's where we come in. OpenMedia.ca is here to ensure that the decisions regarding the internet are fair and citizen-friendly. OpenMedia.ca is a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. We advocate for a media communication system that adheres to the principles of access, choice, diversity, innovation, and openness. Our organization provides resources for volunteer organizers, collaboration tools, and leadership development. We engage, we educate, we empower. For more information, visit openmedia.ca, saveournet.ca, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Sudden weakness, trouble speaking, vision problems, severe headache, and dizziness. These are the warning signs of a stroke. It could happen to you or someone you love. The Heart and Stroke Foundation of BC and Yukon is encouraging British Columbians to be aware of the warning signs. Call 911 if you experience sudden weakness, trouble speaking, vision problems, severe headache, or dizziness. For more information, visit www.heartandstroke.bc.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you for tuning in today. And we are talking about the divine feminine today with Jeffrey Armstrong. And I want to talk about this more in just a moment, but I'm going to throw it out there now because today is election day. And I know it is pouring rain outside and you probably don't want to go to vote today because it's so miserable out, but it is time to vote. We need you to vote. And I want to talk about how women have so much power, yet we are just not holding on to it. We are not activating ourselves and using the opportunities that we have. If every woman in Canada voted, just imagine the changes that we could see in this country and in the world. So women, students, youth, get off your butts and go and vote today. The polls are open today in Vancouver until 7 o'clock. If you're not sure where you're supposed to vote, go to elections.ca. And even if you're not registered to vote, you can still show up with your ID. You need to prove where you live and who you are, but you can vote today. So please make sure that you do that. And we have a caller on the line. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Marie.
Hi. So go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, thanks. Actually, before I say that, I am actually out working with the election today, so I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And yes, to the listeners, if you have any more questions, I'm actually doing some outreach, and you could call me at 778-847-0776 if you have any questions about where to vote today and ID requirements.
Do you want to put that number out one more time?
Yeah, I've been listening. And, Jeffrey, I'm familiar with your work, and I've been listening this morning, and I'm wondering if you could talk specifically about the challenges for, say, the sensitive male temperament in the dating world, knowing of the energies that the sort of the pointed dominant male energies that the feminine likes to receive, and in the difficulties that we might have these days with a man of a more sensitive temperament, how he should be approaching, say, the dating world, being aware of this male and female energetic and aware of where he may have to step up and operate in a different way, if that makes sense.
Yes, Matthew, it's an important question, and we could equally ask how do very strong women who have cultivated their masculine strength also operate in the world, and how do they react differently to people in general? So what I would say is that the mystery behind this is that no one in our culture has actually been taught how to interview human beings and find out what they're really about. Because we haven't been trained in relationship skills, we've been given an ego and sent out into the world. And so the deficiency in our culture is that we haven't been really taught how to communicate with each other. We should have had years of communication skill between the genders during the times we were in high school, grade school, all of those times when we were being taught boring things that we'll never use in life. We should have been taught valuable skills like the ability to communicate with each other. And we should have been taught the general strengths that women and men have in the archetypal sense. And then we should have been shown how to tell somebody who's appears to be feminine but may have a large amount of masculine inside them and vice versa. Because what we're really trying to do in relationship is find a symbiotic relationship. We're trying to find some kind of symbiosis where we provide the other person with the energies and foods that they need. Because what we are in relationships is a kind of available food for the other person to eat that's pre-digested. A good way to think of this is the sun is masculine and the moon is feminine. But most humans can't absorb sunshine and moonshine and no longer need to get married. Most people need your sunshine or moonshine to be right there next to you so you can drink from it. So in a way, a male-female relationship is a kind of feeding relationship where you're going to feed each other energy back and forth. But before you get into that feeding relationship, before you jump into bed, before you jump to get married, you should be able to determine that you're really going to feed each other in the right mix. So a sensitive male needs to know that about himself, and they might do two things. They might take a martial art and desensitize a little bit to balance themselves, in the same way that the very masculine female might take a ballet class to make herself do the opposite of something so she has both qualities developing in her at the same time. So personally, you should cultivate your opposite. As a group, we should learn how to really communicate with each other without a motive other than to know the other person, and do that for quite a while, and then decide to have a relationship in an informed way. In my Ultimate Relationship Seminar, I teach some of these skills. In our culture, Matthew, if you're a sensitive male, you may statistically find that women from a more sensitive culture are more welcoming to you. So a last alternative would be, since the North American females are trained to be stronger in a football and hockey culture, if you find that they're too strong, you may go to Thailand or some other culture where the women have a different expectation and find the woman of your dreams. But you'll still have to do the same process. You'll still have to find if the two of you can feed each other with the right energetic balance. Great question.
So does that answer
that
your question?
Sense. So becoming a whole person is the standard for all, really, to balance the energies ourselves. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Matthew. And do you want to put that number out again for Elections Canada?
certainly. Yeah, if you have any questions about where you're voting today or what you need ID-wise, 778-847-0776.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, thanks, Marie, and thanks for your answer, Jeffrey.
Thanks for your answer. All right, have a great day. Bye. Okay, so, and since we were talking, oh, there's so many things that I want to talk about in such a limited amount of time, so...
here's the one that seems most important.
but we were just talking about, it's interesting what you said about a more sensitive man going and finding an even more sensitive woman, because when you were talking about the balance, it almost made me think it would be more logical for a sensitive man to be with a really tough woman.
Mm. It could be, but the problem would be, he's the one who's supposed to, if you don't mind my saying, have the erection and not her. And there is a physical component of this that we have to actually pay attention to. So it may not be healthy for either of them for him to be the female and her to be the male. It may be that she wants to find somebody with a stronger masculine mix, so she's met in that quality and admires him even more for his strength, but find someone who's also very sensitive. You're right that the sensitivity may be good for her. Conversely, he may need to find someone who's as sensitive as him and then who doesn't challenge his masculinity beyond its capable limits, because then she'll never be happy with him. So what we're trying to find is this energetic place of balance, and it's not just sexual. It's mental, emotional, sexual, intellectual, it's energetic. And so there are different levels of compatibility that you can actually learn to observe. And by observing those and finding out if you're compatible at each of those levels, if you add the numbers up, it adds up to a more complete form of compatibility.
So it's interesting because a lot of times you see couples where the male is quite sensitive and the female is more masculine and the head of the relationship. And I can see how that would work on some level. But it sounds like what you're saying is that even though there may be men who are less manly and women who are less feminine, it's still important for a man to feel like a man and a woman to feel like a woman, or down the road, that femininity, her not feeling feminine from being with her partner, is going to be detrimental to the relationship.
Yeah, there's something really interesting at the basis of this, two things. So let's relate this to the feminine divine. The first is, we say Mother Earth. So if you're in a female body on Mother Earth, you're actually more like the earth by being in a female body, which the ancients said makes you more powerful. So the first thing we need to establish is that women are more powerful than men. That's a given. Men are more muscular and have certain kinds of power that women don't have as much. But as a general rule, the whole process of childbirth, the old saying, a man must work from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done, is a testament to how powerful she is. So, in a way, the masculinity is a more fragile thing. What we see around our planet is masculinity gone bad. So at one end of masculinity is masculinity gone bad, that's brutal, aggressive, unfeeling, and insensitive. In a way, they're reacting to finding no strategy to be sensitive. So to change them, we have to help them find a strategy to become sensitive again. For men who are too sensitive, we have to help them find a strategy to find their masculinity. Now think of the numbers. Right now, in universities, 40% of men are having impotency problems. That's the current statistic. So what this probably means is that our modern lifestyle doesn't foster masculinity very well. But it's been empowering to the females. And we do see this happening in our cultures. So there's a danger with the masculine energy that if you don't support it correctly, they're an endangered species. And only the brutal males will succeed and dominate the world. So in a way, we need to strengthen the sensitive males, and the females need to be aware that it's easier for them to have a male and female side than it is for a man to have a male and a female side.
But when you say that it empowers women, I mean, I think in the business world, it definitely empowers women. But when it comes to relationships, I think that the lack of masculinity in men is really damaging to people finding lasting, loving relationships.
That's right. And that's because the roles used to be agriculturally defined. So for the most part, the people with muscles and testosterone plowed the fields, and for the most part, the people having the babies took care of the house, and it was a reasonable arrangement. It was a work arrangement that worked. In our culture, the work arrangement is now fragmented, and we don't have natural roles. So one of the difficulties in relationship is people have to find natural roles in an unnatural environment, and that's more difficult. Men are also less frequently communicators at the same level that women are. But when you're in a one-to-one relationship where you're always together, there needs to be a lot of communication. So most men have trouble coming up to that level of communication because they're at a disadvantage. The woman's already better at it. This is where, again, sensitivity training and training in school to the different ways of each gender would empower people. But let's take this back one step. Remember what I said, that you're wearing an image and it's not you? So you may be in a female body, but you're not a female. Your Atma is neither male nor female. The Atma of the male is neither male nor female. So what we need is training in those energies as a reflection of the male and female divine. This means that when a man sees the beauty of a woman, instead of the first thing he thinks of being a sexual thought regarding the effect of her beauty on him, he should see her beauty as the feminine divine. Mm-hmm. Bow to it and say, ah, that's you, feminine divine. That beauty is her beauty. Reflect it. Then he should look past it to the person inside. Now, as a woman, I know you'll respond to this. If someone only sees you as your body...
Yeah, it gets a little tiring.
It's a little tiresome because you're not being seen. You know they're not looking at you. I often point this way and say, if you're a lady, you say, excuse me, but that's not me. This is me. Look me in the eyes. Yeah. I was just pointing to my breasts. Your breasts are not you, so don't talk to me like this. Talk to me like this, please. So this is because the women are wearing more beauty on the surface. The men are caught in the glare of the beauty and aren't trained what to do. They're not trained to look past that and see you, and they're not trained to see your beauty as the beauty of the feminine divine and bow to it. If they knew how to do that, it would soften that relationship and start it out on a better footing. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't be forced to be your body, for good or bad, as your only thing. You'd actually be the Atma. So when the relationship gets difficult or when you get older and your bodies don't matter as much, if you're the Atma with each other, you're soulmates. Mm-hmm. So this is actually called soul mating. Learning how to see past the imagery of male and female, to see it as coming from the divine, and then learning how to see each other as the Atma wearing a particular gender body. And it may even be that your mind is different than your gender body. Yes? Often the case. Mm-hmm. Science has recently discovered how this happens. So here's a little insight. When a woman has a male child, all children are female first in the womb. So at a certain point, the male is going to differentiate. The way he does this is 25% of his total need for testosterone is brought in by his mother at that moment, and his genital differentiates from the female genital. So now he's in a male body with a female mind. The next 75% of the testosterone that he requires reformats his mind as male. If that doesn't happen, then what do we have?
You have a male body and a female mind.
That's right. Yeah.
Or brain, a female brain.
That's correct, a female brain. So therefore, this is now being understood scientifically. But it was understood in places like India historically that you had to look at the mind and the body separately. So this is why if you look at someone's body and say, oh, I see you're in a girl body, but you don't see who's inside there, who may actually be a warrior or an athlete or a soldier or someone who's extremely powerful and doesn't look at all like that body that you're looking at. If you just see them as the body, you're insulting them. You're insulting their mind, and you're not looking at their Atma. So the first trick for everyone out there to learn from this is start looking at people. Look first in their eyes and look at their Atma as the consciousness. Then look at their mind and try to see what they're thinking. And look at their body, and then you now see all three. Now try to study them as all three and learn of your connection to them at all three levels. And in this way, we begin to sort out this conversation so that we don't just rush at it with a lot of compulsive need, which is what most human beings do.
Yes, yes.
They rush at each other with a lot of compulsive need.
And, you know, it's not just the women, of course, feel, I mean, it hurts when, this actually recently happened to me. I spilling my guts here on the radio, but I hooked up with someone who wanted to just be make-out buddies, just kiss and have, you know, some physical affection, no sex or anything. And I thought, he caught me on the right day, and I was like, sure, I'd be open to that. But of course, being a woman, I ended up having feelings.
I'd want to know who their dentist was.
I ended up having feelings for him.
Of course.
And he only was interested in me physically.
Right.
And I feel, I mean, as hurt as I am, it like brings tears to my eyes just to talk about it. But he's really missing out.
Of course.
Because he couldn't see past the physical.
He just wanted to borrow your lips.
Yeah, which is fine, you know.
Well, maybe not. But I have a term for this. I call it head over heels in love. My favorite position. So the problem is our human need comes rushing in. And what you were thinking was, well, yeah, lips are tasty. This could be nice.
Yeah.
And you're right, of course.
It was very nice.
They're hygienic. It's nice. It's lovely. And what you're actually doing is what I said before. You're moonshine and he's sunshine. So you're exchanging. Sounds like a fair deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like we're having dinner together plus dessert.
Yes.
Now, that could work if the rest of you wasn't connected to it and wasn't making oxytocin and wasn't starting to make...
Yeah.
And if all your ancestors weren't looking... And the secret to know about your body is, and not just the female, but the male too, 50% of our energy goes to making reproductive tissue. Our body's on autopilot. And it's thinking, whenever we get close to any situation that could resemble a mating situation, our body thinks we're getting ready to make another being.
Yeah.
So the body goes on autopilot. And it's like you have this sports car, and all of a sudden it's going 200 miles an hour. And so that car going 200 miles an hour is actually now dangerous, is driving out of control. But you started the engine and pointed it, but it looked like the checkered flag going down, so it thought, go! And now it's racing.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's better to get to know the person at a deeper level, know their mind, know the level of their Atma, know their physicality, go a little slower, and if you make an agreement with somebody... You should really know them before you make the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a saying I use in the relationship seminar. Listen carefully, everybody. I shall always cherish my original misconceptions regarding you.
Mm.
I shall always cherish my original misconceptions regarding you. That's what most people are doing. They're in love with their projection mm-hmm. that they projected on to the other person. They didn't really find out if it was the truth of who they were.
All right.
I'm glad the kissing was good. At least you got something out of it.
It was very nice, yes. okay, so you're listening to Synchronicity here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. It is time for another break, so we will be back in just a flash. We're speaking today with Jeffrey Armstrong about the Divine Feminine, and Jeffrey is the author of The Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar. And do you have a website?
I do. It's jeffreyarmstrong.com. And the book has its own website, spiritualteachingsoftheavatar.com.
Wonderful.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Coming up in about 15, 17 minutes is Parts Unknown here on CITR. So stick around for that. Right now you're listening to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today's guest is Jeffrey Armstrong, author of Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar, and we're also filming for Novus Television, and it's just like this big experiment. We've got the camera set up in the corner of the room. So hi to everyone. If you want to have a sneak peek at what goes on in the station here at CITR, then tune in to Novus TV sometime soon, and it'll be on, I guess. I don't know. We'll just see what it looks like before they put it on TV. I'm kind of covering myself now, a little bit shy today. So we are talking about the Divine Feminine with Jeffrey Armstrong, and we only have a few minutes left in the show, and since today is Election Day, I think it's really important to talk about this, even though I'd love to talk about kissing and boys all for the rest of the day. But we really need to talk about voting. When the Dalai Lama was here in Vancouver, he said the Western woman will save the world. And that is why I think it's so important for women especially, and as youth and women, to vote. If every woman in Canada voted, this country would be represented by a government that cares about women's rights and protecting the feminine issues. So what do you think the Dalai Lama meant when he said that the Western woman will save the world?
Well, rather than trying to second guess him, though, I suspect many of us who are teaching the knowledge of India have the same thing in mind. I call the yoga movement, which is maybe more than 100 million people worldwide, 85% of whom are female, the immune system of Mother Earth. Because it's about lifestyle. As I said at the beginning, yoga is about what you do inside this circle. So females are the beings who are in charge of our lifestyle. But the problem is men, and not all men, but men with greedy intentions who don't necessarily want to tell us the truth, have taken over our food supply, have weaponized the planet, have created nuclear power that's endangering our whole planet. And everyone, in a certain way, has had to just sort of let this happen somehow. Didn't feel they had the power to stop it. Of all the people on our planet, women, because of this thing we talked about at the beginning where the supreme was male, it almost kind of told the women, don't talk because your opinion is not being asked for. So there's this kind of old scar for the feminine that speaking is not feminine. Speaking stridently or clearly or forcefully, less so. But in India, this is not the case. In India, one of the feminine divines is a female named Sarasvati. And Sarasvati is the goddess of learning, the origin of Mother Goose in our culture, the storyteller. But she's called the goddess of speech, wisdom, and truth, and the arts of elegance and beauty. So this voice was well known in India, that the feminine was supposed to speak. So in the Indian culture, when it was intact, hundreds of years ago, the man never did anything without asking his wife's opinion or the woman's opinion. The villages never did anything without women on the council. And the female voice was very strong and very present, because she was present as the goddess in the culture as well, as male and female divine. So right now, just to give you an example, Fukushima is the third ring of the alarm clock on nuclear power. Canada is the largest, the two largest exports from Canada are plutonium and wheat. And so right now, the women of the world should be going, wait a minute, our whole planet's being endangered by a nuclear reactor. Why are we making this dangerous energy? This must stop. And all of their voices could come up, and they could say, we're against this. The problem is, if they do that, politically it looks like they've overreached their partner. And if they can't get their partner to agree, they might hold back. Why? To hold their family together. Because their job of being mother and protecting their children causes them not to speak.
But when you vote in secret. So a woman doesn't have to be on the same page as her partner. He can vote however he wants, and she can vote for the party
she wants. I agree with
you.
But voting is not enough. They have to speak up on the internet, speak up through the social media, speak up socially and publicly. Because the things, and this is where I was going, the things that are happening now are threatening your children, ladies. They're not just general threats. So every reason the female may think for not speaking out, not just voting, but speaking out, these dangers now are threatening everything you may think you're protecting by being silent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's different about our world. So what I'm explaining is the feminine silence before was in a way to protect her family. She didn't want to be so outspoken that she endangered everyone, so she spoke to her husband and let him speak on her behalf, almost a kind of graciousness in her. But that's because she was mostly protecting her children. But now, if the women don't speak up, the men are not speaking up enough, because the women are the protectors of life. And the men will not kill the women for speaking up. So this turns out to be, as the Dalai Lama said, the woman's moment in history, and especially the women in the North American continent, to speak up and say things like nuclear power have to stop, poisoning things have to stop, damaging things have to stop. All of these things we're doing have to change. We have to find another way to live. We have to change our food. We have to go back to a healthy way of doing all of those things. That lifestyle that nurtures the children and is the future is in the hands of the female. So now, hopefully, the idea that there's a feminine divine will help her find her voice. And I think those many women who are practicing yoga are now also coming to understand through the feminine divine that they should speak, and that they're made in the image of the feminine divine in their body to speak in a gracious, inspiring way that people will listen to, and they'll do what they say because they make it so attractive. And they use their beauty to attract people to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we can hope for.
And so where do you think, Jeffrey, that all of this complacency comes from in youth and in women? We kind of go along where things are just sort of okay, so we don't really do anything about it, and they just get a little bit worse and a little bit worse slowly. And I think a lot of people aren't voting because they feel, I don't know, like they don't care. They don't know what to do. They don't think their voice matters. Where do you think that comes from?
Maria, there's a difficult truth behind this that everyone needs to know. Right now, 15% of the world's population is using 85% of the world's resources. And we are that 15%. So the reluctance to speak in our culture is unfortunately because we are the culture that needs to change the way it's doing things the most. And as a result, it's going to be a more radical change for us to adjust our lifestyle and give up 35% or 40% of the luxuries that we have and go to a simpler, more bearable style of living that's still beautiful and elegant. And we have to conceive of doing that. If we don't, then a part of us is just out of greed not acting because we're overwhelmed by being so fortunate as to have so much. And we're just turning a blind eye to the suffering of the world. That's getting increasingly difficult to do. So hopefully, the empathy for the world will push the women and the men of the North American continent to a point of commitment where they'll begin to live differently. And this is why it's so important that we stop things like nuclear power that lead us down the wrong direction, and tar sands and all of these things, and start making a sustainable reality that's more reasonable and where the rest of the world can grow and we can make a reasonable lifestyle for the whole planet. Because if we don't, we actually in our lifetime may have to watch 2 billion people die. And that's the other thing why perhaps people close a blind eye. That's too frightening to think of, and they don't want to think that thought. But the feminine divine and the masculine divine care for the good of all. If we want to be like them, we need to think of the good of all. And we have to be bigger persons to think of the good of all than to just think of our own pleasure.
Okay. And, you know, I'm all about girl power and the divine feminine, but we need to make it clear that we're not talking about the divine feminine being better than the divine masculine. There's a balance in all of us inside. We are both feminine and masculine.
Absolutely. In fact, we should look at each other this way all the time. And this is why the namaste is not only to the Atma inside, it's to the image of the male and female divine we see in each other. If men and women learn to bow to each other in the right consciousness, then what they're really bowing to is the beauty of the male and female divine that they both are endowed with, that they're bearing as the image. And when you learn how to do that in your relationships, they sweeten and they soften. And you can't be at war with each other, because you can't be at war with the beautiful divine being that's come to be with you. And after all, you know that their lips are so sweet that you don't want to quarrel with them.
No.
You want to kiss them. It's so much better, isn't it?
It definitely is. Well, let's talk again for a moment about the spiritual teachings of the Avatar. What are people going to take from this book? What are they going to learn?
Well, when the Avatars came to Earth years and years ago, in their story is contained tools of how everyone is like the many tools that I've shared today. That they're tools of living that everyone can use to be their best self in this world, to be connected to their source, to live in an integrated and sustainable, harmonious way on the planet, to find a way to live cooperatively with everyone else. So the many tools that we need to live like that haven't been given to us yet. And in the spiritual teachings of the Avatar, many of those tools are present. And I've also, in two chapters, told the two stories that I mentioned of the Avatars. So it's a lovely kind of handbook for spiritual activism in the world that's loving, gentle, and all-encompassing. And you learn after a while to look at everyone and say, I see you.
And your website, again, if people are interested in taking your relationship seminar.
JeffreyArmstrong.com, or the book is SpiritualTeachingsOfTheAvatar.com.
Thank you so much for Jeffrey Armstrong for being on the show today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Novus TV for providing the camera. And I hope that you will go out and vote. The polls are open today until 7 p.m. So get out there. I know it's yucky out, but it'll just take a few minutes. Go on your lunch break. Go after work whenever you can. Make the time. You don't have to be registered to vote. You can just show up with your ID, proof of where you live. And if you have any questions about where you're supposed to be voting, go to elections.ca. Make your voice heard. Ladies, especially students, youth, 18 to 35-year-olds are the least likely to vote, and it's going to affect us for a lot longer than all the senior citizens who you know are out there voting for Harper right now. So get out there and vote if you care about this country. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the show with Ziggy Marley, my favorite song by Ziggy Marley, and coming up next is Parts Unknown. Have a fabulous day, a fabulous week. Be well. Namaste. We love you.
Namaste. And Marie, my inner female, has a message. My favorite color is green.
Yay. Mine too. Yay. Voting green. Yep, yep.
All right.
Yeah. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. Take you to the temple tonight. All my days I've been searching to find out what this life is worth. Through the books and battles of time, I've made up my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. A calling, have you heard? Bring all the lovers to the fold. 'Cause no one is gonna lose their soul. Sure. So don't let nobody stop us.